From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. On the program today, Jules Jensen and Clayton Squire of Berkshire County, Massachusetts Livetronica act Higher Organics, as well as Zach Levy of the Big Up Festival. Lots of show today. We got to dive right in. Higher Organics has a firm foundation in the world of jam. I'd like to find out a bit about each of your musical backgrounds. Tell me a bit about your instrumental training, what you listened to as a kid, that sort of thing. Let's go ahead and start with Clayton on guitar.
Me and Jules started playing together as kids, actually, playing a lot of the oldies in the basement with his dad, who was a really well-established fiddle player in the area and could play any instrument.
Clayton and I have been playing together since, 11 in fifth grade. Came through many different styles while really finding the voice that we unified on. But from basement jam sessions as even preteens to keeping that going and always just pushing, and improv was a huge part of any music that we did. Even if we were playing covers with our old band in high school, we'd still like to always put an improv thing into it. And as we got more and more into this scene and into this type of music, that quickly became the focus, and we found our voice through that.
And I imagine that improvisation came out of a love of the big jam influences, the Dead Fish, that sort of thing?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing an interview, and actually may have been Paige from Fish, I think, in the It DVD, but he makes the point that after 20 to 25 minutes of just improv and continuous music, you will reach this kind of point between the communication and just the effect of the music that ends up happening that you would have never been able to get to otherwise. We'd already kind of experienced that firsthand, and it really just reaffirmed that that is something worth pursuing and basically naturally happen as you continue to push your improvisational method. I'm not downplaying composing music at all and writing a good song. In fact, writing a 3-minute concise song that a lot of people can relate to is just as hard as going out there with no set list and no song names and winging it. It's just opposite ends of the spectrum. But I think our end that we live on is, the improv and just playing to the room, playing to the scene, playing to the people, and getting kind of, an on-the-spot product that it just plays to a different musical taste than nailing the same song every night in a row, because that has value too, but it's just a different thing.
I'd certainly like to get back to the improv side of what you do, which is a major part of what you do, but let's talk about then the bringing on Brian into the mix. Clayton, I guess this is about 2005 now, when you sort of meshed as a trio and said, this is the sound, this is the instrumentation, and this is the band?
Definitely. He was probably 14 and we were 16. We had been already producing open mics through a not-for-profit youth advocacy organization in our town, where we were having all kinds of kids showing up because there was really no immediate venue anywhere in the area for younger bands to play music live at night. We sort of started out from the beginning having to make our own venue and make our own show and be involved with all the different parts of that process. And he just sort of stumbled through there, one man in it.
Yeah, like, goofy little bass slapper with a mushroom cut.
Still playing the Big Dog
slapping that bass like it was nobody's business, though. And I heard the first time I just heard him play, I was like, wow, you're pretty good and you're pretty young, and we should probably link up and jam out. And I remember one night when Clayton and I were hanging out at my house, and I think Brian had come over once or twice, and the music had already really taken a new shape and the connection was there and it just felt right. And I just remember Clayton saying, we got to make this his second home. We got to make sure that this is how we do it, and we have enough time to be putting this in all the time, and that it's just the way it is. And it quickly became the case. His parents are amazing and really supportive and believe in him and believe in all of us, and it really did become his second home quickly. And we're a family now. And this is the way it is. And it's a testament to mind power and manifestation. And it goes far beyond just music. If you really focus your efforts on something, it will happen.
As far as your sound goes, when did this conception of live electronic, the interpretation of DJ style music with organic instruments, become such a big part of your sound and what you were doing and what you were trying to do with your music?
I think it was pretty inspiring when we started getting into some of the electronica and seeing DJs and just seeing where technology was going with it as well.
After being more into the traditional band stuff already, not that no one had drawn correlations between DJs and live bands and the way those lines could be blurred, but more experience to both of them firsthand.
It was more about treating our instruments like the records, or being DJs more with our loose concepts of jam structures and ideas that, you know, we're communicating musically to each other. It just sort of took on this movement more like a DJ set, where the music's not really stopping ever, mostly dance beat oriented.
A lot of dynamics, you know, a lot of build ups and breaks, and try to build the tension. And that's a big thing about a DJ set. Another thing about a DJ set is that ours is more improv than a DJ set can be, but a cool thing about a DJ is that they're working with, you know, the vocabulary of all the songs that they have in their library or whatever they're using, but they still can switch it up night to night. And I think that parallels our music in the way that we kind of have zones and, you know, riffs and sections that are familiar and I guess would represent, in this analogy, the song and the record crate. But it's how you blend it in and where you use it and what section of that you kind of reference. And maybe, you know, you do a remix of it. We'll do the one zone housey one night, but then we'll kind of have the same zone could be a drum and bassy or even a dubstepy feel another night. And it's the common threads that run through them, but the reinterpretation ability of it, I think that also parallels a DJ set in a way you don't always see in a live band crossover.
Tell me about the functions and the roles that you play on stage when you are working in this very loose, free-flowing situation. You've been playing since you were little tykes. Maybe you don't even need more than a glance to know to go into section B of this jam that you've already done before. There's only three of you, which I imagine makes it easier, but you still have to change directions like a school of fish.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely the amount of time that we've been playing together has made a huge impact on the almost telepathic nature of it. You know what I mean? I think the foundation that me and Brian are able to lay down basically just through glances creates a strong enough foundation that Brian and Clayton can really be communicating more verbally about changes they want to make or, you know, progressions and stuff like that. And yeah, then Brian can kind of just look back over to me and glance around and we'll, you know, 99.9% of the time be on the same page sensibility-wise about where we think it should go from there and being able to just turn it on a dime sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, the without a net factor and what we've been really realizing more and more lately listening back to our shows is that the best shows are the ones where we really are making all those changes at the exact same time. And you'll listen to a show that you feel isn't as good as one of the really, really good standout ones. And it's not that, you know, anyone's playing badly or that we're not, the sensibility is gone or anything, but even the minute difference of someone making those changes, even a bar away from, you know, instead of doing it on the same time, makes such a larger difference. And I think, you know, we're getting better at just really communicating in all forms, hand signs, verbal, glances, whatever, to really make sure that we're sharing the sensibility that's there, but making sure that it really just clicks at the same time. And that's what makes the biggest difference.
Clayton, can your live sound and energy be captured in an album, or are you really just a live band and that's all there is to it? No studio work necessary.
Well, this is definitely something, you know, we've talked about a lot, and I definitely believe that, you know, there's going to be many different sort of concept albums down the road for us to get to do when we have the time in a studio to do that. But the focus definitely right now is still in the experimental stage of seeing how far you can go with not really a whole lot too defined or determined yet.
I think a lot of bands make the mistake of, as soon as they realize they're a band, it's like, we need to record an album now, you know? And it's like, they'll go into the studio, spend all this money recording material that, one, doesn't end up even sounding like what they end up sounding like over the course of, you know, their formative time as a band. And two, a lot of times they'll do it and there's no one who wants to buy it yet. You know, they don't have any fans and people who want to buy it. And by the time they do, they're ready to actually release a new album that sounds like them. So, you know, what we really tried to just jump into producing our own events because we had no other options where we lived, and focusing on the marketing, giving ourselves the right kind of setting for our music. You know what I mean? I find, you know, if you're going to do 10 shows, but 9 out of 10, you have a bad slot or the people aren't in the right time period of over the course of a festival or an event to really experience it in the right way. And I'm not referring to drugs there. I'm just referring to setting and atmosphere and sound quality and production quality and everything. I'd rather take many less shows that present it in the right way than any possible show that just creates a false notion or a stigma about, you know, anything, your music, your marketing, your fan base, who you are, any of that. So, you know, what we kind of went about it in the opposite way of just finding each other and finding our voice and really trying to hone it and woodshedding a lot and playing shows that we found as positive opportunities. And then now we're at a point where, you know, our fan base is growing rapidly and we're getting more exposure and going out and playing more shows. And I think if we really now did an album, we would be more confident in what we want it to sound like if it wasn't live. And there would be people who want to buy it now, you know? So it's, I think I'd be in much more comfortable position making something like that now. And it has been discussed. We're not only really in the process of trying to get together a live compilation, but get into a studio or a couple studios and try to put something together more along the lines of like a Soundtribe artifact and, you know, compositions that are more collage-y based out of, you know, real clips, but not just straight played through songs.
I understand. Jules, tell me a bit about your solo project, Electronic Anonymous. Were there any DJs you set out to emulate at first, or did you just start producing and this sort of unique sound came out?
Well, I even beyond just DJs, yeah, I always try to take influence from many a different thing. I mean, I guess some DJs that I could reference off the top of my head would be, you know, like The Orb. That was some of my favorite stuff that I heard long time ago. My older brother introduced me to that when I was really young, and I was just like, wow, this is great. You know, that was the first electronic music, and then New Deal is kind of the first Jamtronic stuff, but you know, the Orb and they're just more their eclecticness, you know, and how they could hit any multiple types of styles was a big influence to me, more than the sound product. Tipper obviously is unbelievable and amazing, and his productions are just mind-bogglingly clean. I really love that stuff. Ott, once again, and you know, I'm not just plugging acts that are on our festival. This is why the festival is so special to me, is because these acts that I respect greatly and think, you know, are some of the best out there, we get actually, you know, get to share the stage with and host and spend a weekend with, which is awesome. You know, the list goes on and on. So much Timo Maas and tons of Richie Houghton, Magda. I mean, you know, I could go on and on. And as you guys know from trying to catalog the world of electronic music, we could be here for the next 10 years talking about everyone we like. So, you know, really, if it gets booty shaken, that's the main focus, you know, is dancing and just kind of that collective dance communal thing that happens on a packed dance floor. And, you know, the sounds, just the sound, any sound that, you know, it's hard to define or put your finger on, you've never heard before, or is very comforting because it's familiar. It's just an inspiration to me.
Do any Electronic Anonymous tracks make their way into higher organic sets? Are you thinking about maybe melding your worlds?
Yeah, no, that is actually the biggest goal and next step is to bring those together, which is a harder task than it seems because, you know, when we're totally improvised as a band versus 4-minute compositions during production, it is hard to find the middle ground with, you know, what kind of clips do you use with a band to not put it in a box but not make it totally, you know, garage band fishing style. So, you know, I've been just kind of amassing pieces of equipment that we need to be able to comfortably control Ableton while we're jamming. I got a piece of software that will sync this tempo of Ableton to my drums via trigger and, you know, stay with it regardless of time signature or type of beat that it is or anything. And, you know, trying to get that and the right control to control that while playing and have it be flexible and fluid yet clean is what we're working on right now, and we'll definitely be incorporating elements of Electronic Anonymous tracks into that with the band. So, you know, we're really, really trying to have that ready to debut at the festival.
Thank you.
Mysterious Sound from Electronic Anonymous, available on the UNS Challenge Volume 1.
Let's bring in Zach Levy from the Big Up Festival. It's a relatively young festival, but it's already gained some notoriety and high-profile acts in its short history. I wonder, first of all, how did you find Sunnyview Farm, which is enormous, something like 1,500 acres?
Yeah, it's a pretty big, beautiful place. It's a family farm that I'm fortunate enough to be able to use. Great people, great spot.
Were you trying to strike some sort of balance between electronic and jam and straight-up rock acts, or does the lineup just represent some of your favorite artists doing it out there today?
It's a combination. It's our favorite acts. It's people that we've known for years that we love. It's keeping it interesting. A couple years ago, these guys started turning me on to electronic music, and it really wasn't my thing. I knew nothing about it. They turned me on to acts like Tipper and Ott and Big Jack Inn and all these people, and it's like, wow, I didn't know this music was out there. And I'm fortunate enough to have great people steering the ship, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to book acts that I love that I've known forever.
For such a small organization putting on such a huge event, it's obviously a massive undertaking, and you've been on the scene for a while, but obviously it's something different seeing what other people are doing and then going out and trying to do it yourself. Do you have any worldly advice for any young folks out there stupid enough or crazy enough to attempt what you've done with the Big Up, putting your life there on the line?
Yeah, you know, I would go to shireworksproductions.com and ask us to do some consulting for you. No, you know, I think you got to be in it for the right reasons. If anybody out there wants to have a festival so they can make $1 million next year, you know, I would say invest in the stock market or something, you know, sketchy, but a little less difficult. It's, you got to be in it for the love and the right reasons, and know that it's a long uphill battle. And if you're doing it right, you know, I get a week off after our festival, and then it's
back in
working
it for
the next year. So be ready for long hours and a lot of hard work, and be ready to meet some of the best people you ever meet and a couple people you probably don't want to.
So back to Higher Organics, what does it mean to be the host band for the Big Up Festival? What are your duties as host? I imagine it has nothing to do with hors d'oeuvres. what is your role?
Yeah, making sure that, yeah, the punch is always stocked. No, but I mean, it comes from our history of producing our own events in, you know, in our hometown, because there was nowhere else to do it. So through doing that, we were always kind of the de facto hosts of those events, which, you know, garnered a fan base and garnered a base of volunteers and just kind of notoriety where we came from, which led us to meet Zach and led us to bigger and greater things here with the Big Up. So the work, we're in the office, you know, yeah, 10 months out of the year working on this when we're not out on the road playing or whatever. And the love and effort and hours that get put into that gives us the ownership over it in that way musically. Not that it isn't a combined greater than the sum of its parts thing with the lineup, but this is our home. This is our backyard. And we have a lot of our family and friends who these events grew out of when it was just them coming to support us and see us and find out about new music that we like. And so, you know, to hold that down and hold that space and put a face on it musically, personally, all of that just in on the scene itself is our duty as a host band. And in addition to that, musically, we plan on guesting people and kind of doing some surprise stuff and playing to the night and playing to the sets that we choose for ourselves, so that, you know, it's the thread that runs through it. Not that that's the only thread that runs through it, but it's just kind of touch back in with the core of it in a way throughout the course of each day's programming.
You know, more than that, Clay's our graphic designer, and, you know, we get a lot of compliments on how professional all our work does. That's Clay. Jules does most of the booking and runs production, and everybody in Higher Organics works really, really hard on this festival all year, and it wouldn't be nearly the same thing without them, or might not exist without them.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we wish you the best of luck with the festival. Jules Jensen and Clayton Squire of Higher Organics, Zach Levy from the Big Up, thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. Special thanks go to Jules Jensen and Clayton Squire with Higher Organics, as well as Zach Levy of the Big Up Festival. Higher Organics will be hosting the Big Up at the end of July in Ghent, New York. More details at theUNS.com. Coming up next week, a special two-part episode with Darren Shearer of The New Deal on the Seminary Livetronica Act's final run. You don't want to miss it.
Remember to visit theunce.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. You can still win tickets to Summer Camp, Wakarusa, and The Big Up. Just click on Contests and go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the Unce podcast, contact me at anand@theunce.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunce.com. Catch you next week.